Members, I'm going to call the committee to order. We're not at quorum, but hopefully we'll be at quorum soon. I had hoped to start out by talking about the minutes, but I want to wait till most of the committee members are here. So I'm going to ask Representative Newton to come forward. Members, just a reminder, last week we laid 261 on the table. And so we're going to take it off the table to continue the discussion. I had promised testifiers who we weren't able to get to that we would have an opportunity for them to offer their testimony today. We can do some question and answers. And then my intent is to lay this back on the table, to lay this over to subsequent hearing because the author does have an amendment. But I want to make sure that we're being real transparent with the 24-hour rule and all that. So we'll bring it back. Members will have an opportunity to look at that amendment ahead of time and come fully prepared to act on the bill at a later date. It won't be this week, members, because we're going to hear the bullying bill on Thursday. I'll repeat this later when more members are here. I suspect that's going to be a long hearing that involves both the morning and evening section. My hope is that we'll be able to get through that on Thursday, and then we'll get back to this bill and other bills next week. So with that, Representative Newton, your bill is before us again. I'm wondering if you want to say a few words, and if not, or whatever, then I'll ask members in the audience to come forward and offer testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, what I'd like to do is reserve my remarks until we come back and we vote on the bill. But I would like to have the testifiers come down.
Thank you very well. Representative Newton, we'll hear from you afterwards. So I'm going to ask, and this is the order I have it in the agenda, Mr. Scott Kronquist, Lisa Sobeck, and then Kirk Schneiderwin. I think we had, I don't know if he's here today, but I think we didn't hear from Mr. Bagnoli, who was on the list last week. And so if he's in the audience, I would offer him opportunity also to come forward. And then, of course, anyone else in the public that wishes to offer testimony. So with that, good morning. And members, I apologize for my voice today. I'm wrestling with some allergy issues, so don't worry, you're not going to get sick by being near me. later on, I think, actually later on, I'm going to ask our vice chair to continue the proceedings of the hearing so I can just sort of slink off to the corner and continue to blow my nose outside of everyone's view. So with that, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I would just like to go on record saying that AMSD strongly supports Representative Newton's bill, and we really appreciate him bringing it forward. We think the time has more than come to allow our locally elected school boards the ability to set the school calendar that meets the needs of their local students and their local communities. But I'm going to stop there, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to turn it over to Lisa Schobeck, who is the AMSD board member, and let her go into further detail about why we support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist, and welcome to the committee, Ms. Schobeck.
Yeah.
I'm a Chicago boy. I'm supposed to be able to pronounce these, so my apologies for mispronouncing
it. Well, it is a Swedish name, and I married into that, so I'm used to it. But thank you, Chair, and members of the committee here for allowing me a few minutes to speak in support of House File 261, allowing school districts the option of beginning prior to the Labor Day. There's just a couple key points that I would like to make on the importance of this bill and why I ask for your support today. It's been almost 30 years since this law went into effect, and there's arguably no way that we can compare education 30 years ago to what we are dealing with today. The mandates, the ever-increasing demands of public education have forced those of us working in and for our schools to flex, adjust, and change how we do business. In Moundsview, where I am a school board member, we are known and recognized for our innovative and proactive approaches to these demands. House File 261 would allow us greater flexibility to implement new programs and innovations. Having extra time on the front end of the school calendar would greatly simplify and provide better quality early assessment and learning for our students. Also, high school fall sports and activities begin in mid-August. It only makes sense, then, that the start of the school year would coincide with these activities. More importantly, an earlier start date aligns better with higher education calendars, allowing students enhanced opportunities to participate in PSEO, college in the schools, and other such programs. As I'm sure you're aware, this past fall, Irondale implemented an early college program that is the first in the state and allows the students the opportunity to earn a two-year degree all for free while attending high school. This program is geared for kids in the middle, so it is different than the PSEO. We have partnered with Anoka Ramsey Community College with this. It is a model that is being looked at very closely and being perhaps something that can be done statewide. It would make sense then that we be able to align our calendar more closely to the higher education calendar to be able to continue to look at this as a very valid model. If we don't or won't recognize the need to adjust and offer better experiences for our students, our future workforce will suffer. House File 261 is just good policy. School calendars should be based on the ever-demanding educational needs of our students. Minnesota has long prided itself on its superior and innovative public schools. If we expect our students to compete with their peers in this global world, we need to provide local decision makers with all the tools possible and not impede on innovation. Minnesota needs to remove itself from the very short list of states nationally that prohibit the start of school prior to Labor Day. As is our history in Moundsview, we are continuing to move forward with innovation and making sure our students are ready for post-secondary success no matter what path they choose to take once they leave our schools. I'm asking you to be a part of that success with your support of House File 261. Thank you,
Ms. Schobeck. We're going to hear from Mr. Schneiderwin, and then I'll stop to have questions of these three testifiers. We already have a member who has a question on the list. But before we go on, Ms. Schobeck, I just want to publicly commend your school district for the work that you you referenced earlier. As you know, we had a hearing earlier at the beginning of session to begin to explore that dynamic. And I have to say I'm really excited about what it portends for models for Minnesota students all over the state in terms of this marriage of content, pursuit of content knowledge with a strong application both in the post-secondary and hopefully also out in the career world. I think this is really the trend for K-12 and post-secondary. So I want to acknowledge and thank you for your school district's leadership in this regard. I'm also struck by kind of one of the underlining principles here that you've laid out, which is the principle of flexibility. And my experience over the years is that it's precisely this issue of flexibility that tends to get members from both sides of the aisle in lots of trouble as we try to direct and help shape a different and better K-12 delivery system. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Hang tight because we'll have some questions. Mr. Schneiderwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I, too, want to thank Representative Newton for bringing this issue forward again. And we represent all of the public school boards, and I think that's important for you to understand. We heard from a school board member from the Orono School District and now Moundsview, but we have school board members in outstate who want this as well. And I don't know how you define outstate in the urban area, but I think collectively as an association, this is something that's very important to our entire membership and statewide importance. Now, I don't think it will do justice to the importance that it gives to our local school boards, but we represent folks who like to make decisions for their local communities, for their local students. And I think that's very evident today that this flexibility, when you go back to the bill, it makes it permissive. And there's nothing here, despite what people claim, is that everybody's going to jump on board here. Now, 72% of our districts have said that. But that debate, in our opinion, should be happening in the school boardroom where you have community input, You have issues of flexibility. You have taken all considerations of the conditions of the community and the district they represent, and that debate is had there. They and the school board is, what I should say is that they are elected officials too, and if they do something that's not in line with what the community wants, there is a ballot box. I think that needs to be understood as well. And so they are very sensitive to what the community needs and community wants. And I think it's imperative, as you've heard from the school board members today, is what's driving their decision-making. And what's driving their decision-making is student achievement in those opportunities that are going to improve student achievement. And so we're absolutely supportive of this bill. Puts the decision-making back in the hands of our locally elected officials. And I think it's really important to understand that when they go through the evaluation of this process, school boards got to understand the demands of their own buildings, and they are not going to move this start back to August 1 when you have the hottest season of the year and may not have air conditioning facilities in all your buildings. And so they've got to take all of those little variables into case to make sure that they make the right decision. And I think it's imperative that the point that I want to leave you with is that boards more than ever are focusing on student achievement. And I think the piece that we also are concerned about is the achievement gap issue. And I think one of the things that you've seen with the flexible learning year piece is trying to drive change in that 25 school district consortium that addresses those issues of achievement gap. And I think that the data is still preliminary, and we have another year to go on that to find out what that really means. But ultimately, that decision should be made by the local school board, and we think that that's where it should be happening, and we're ready to stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwin. We do have two members with questions, and Mr. Kuhnquist, certainly feel welcome or free to come forward if you want to weigh in on this discussion relative to the questions. Representative Barrett, and then Representative Benson, and then Representative Kreischer. We're going right down the alphabet. I like that. Representative Barrett.
Very efficient way to do it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schneiderwin, you had mentioned that you don't think school districts would start their year on August 1st. What do you see the practical implementation of this change in law if it does pass?
Mr. Schneiderwin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett, this is a little bit hard to say because it's going to be a local decision, but I would anticipate that because you have 90,000 students participating in high school league activities in the second week of August, my guess is it's going to, or second or third week, wherever that falls, my guess is that will be a greater discussion since you have that many kids participating in football, cross country, tennis, all those fall sports. So I think the big thing is that the board will evaluate the community as well. And if you're living in a resort community and you understand the impact of your regional economy, that decision that variable will be part of the decision as well. And more than likely, those boards will have to take that in and make that decision.
Representative Barrett.
Sure. A follow-up question, or a secondary question, I should say. You talked a lot about what's good for the local school district, and you advocated your point of view in regards to education in schools and what's good for that particular district. What do you say to the opposite side of the argument, the tourism industry and others who just say that, you know, this will impact our economy to some extent, either for the kids who resorts count on to work during those times of the year, or to actually the business of tourism in our state, which is so high. Can you tell me, do you appreciate that argument? Do you dismiss it? What's your point of view in that area?
No, I
Mr. Schneider.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barron, I think they can coincide. They can work together. I absolutely do, and I understand their argument, but I think that we're, as a representative organization of local boards or statewide boards, who want to make that decision that best impacts them. And can you imagine if you're elected into office and all of a sudden one of the most important things or one of the important variables in determining student achievement is out of your hands, and that decision cannot be made. But I think they can coincide, and I think that Lisa pointed out the importance of tomorrow's workforce. And I think that's one of the things that the committees have been challenged with this session is creating that next century workforce. And I think K-12 is very integral part of that. running into the post-secondary enrollment options and then into the post-secondary programs as well. So I think they can coincide.
Ms. Schobeck, I wonder if you want to weigh in on that, but particularly given that last comment. Don't feel like you have to, but it does seem to me that there may be some emerging possibilities about combining real-world experiences for students, working closely with the private sector and K-12. I leave it to you. It's just an observation I sort of popped in my head as soon as Mr. Schneiderwin shared that thought, and given that you have this history in your district, so feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly, you know, I don't think any of us want to impede on any business, small business, or any resort. I think the bigger discussion is, what do we value? And if education is what we say we value, then we need to be serious about that. And so, you know, especially, you know, as I talk about in Moundsview, when I talk about early college and our partnership with the Nova Ramsey and for PSCO, if those kids are already starting 2 weeks ahead, those families are already not going anywhere. They're already in the, you know, they're in class. They're already learning. And so, you know, I think it's important, you know, that we look back. What do we value? What's important? And if education and a workforce that is prepared is important to us, we need to be looking at all of the avenues to get those kids there. And I think, you know, you talked a little bit about the achievement gap. That's really a huge, huge thing that we are working on in Moundsview. We have an equity promise that we have said that all kids, it doesn't matter what school they attend, what their socioeconomic background is, that they will all have the same education. They will leave ready to go. And we've made a commitment and a promise to that. And so, again, having some flexibility of when we get those kids in, doing some earlier assessments on the front end so we know what they need, we can better place them. So this isn't just about high school either. It's really, it goes back into kindergarten. Where are those kids when they walk in the door? And so that by the time they leave us, you know, in May, late May or early June, they, you know, we really have a good idea of who they are. Earlier in the year, waiting until October and November, when, you know, it's sometimes too late.
Thank you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Barrett, I think one of the things is we, in the school districts, have a fixed number of days generally, and you know that's negotiated with the unions, generally around 180, 183 days of teaching time. So what you might lose in a resort in August, you'd pick up in June. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're still dealing with the same sort of thing.
Members, we have a good seven, at least, I think, members who have questions. I'm going to try to get you all in here. We do have Representative Dabney's bill. So I'm going to ask if members can be very concise about their questions, and if the responses can be similarly concise, that would be incredibly helpful. Representative Benson and Representative Kreischer. Yes. Representative Benson.
Could you talk to him a minute?
Representative Benson, you have a question?
Yes, thank you.
And we're pressed for time, so let's keep the questions concise, right, if at all possible. Thank
well,
you.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was wondering if I could have an opportunity to ask the representative or the for the Minnesota State High School League. I think he's here.
Mr. Aronson, good morning.
Mr. Aronson. And Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm asking Mr. Aronson to come briefly here is that one of the issues that was referenced in the testimony had to do with the Minnesota State High School League and the fact that thousands of our students do begin participating in athletics before the start of school each year. And my first question for Mr. Aronson is whether he had asked to testify about this, because here we have an example of opportunities for athletic participation before the beginning of the school year, before Labor Day. But we're having contention over whether or not students engaged in academics should have that same right. So my question for Mr. Aronson is, could you tell me some statistics on the numbers of young people who do participate before school starts.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Roger Ernst, and I represent the Minnesota State High School League, and Representative Benson did grab me out in the hall and ask me this, and I went upstairs and visited, called Dave Stead of the High School League. Our start date for fall sports this year in 2013 is August 12th. The most recent data that we have in boys football, we have 26,151 kids that participate statewide. In girls volleyball, we have 14,910. Those sports start on that August 12th date. We also have boys and girls soccer. Girls soccer, we have 8,117 kids. Uh-huh. Boys soccer, we have 8,907 students that participate. And then we also have boys and girls cross country. 6,451 boys and 4,952 girls. So lots of students. And Representative Nunes said, and we have cheering, and there are other activities, obviously, as well. But those were the numbers that I obtained.
It's a lot of engaged young people in Minnesota. Representative Benson, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I'm asking these questions is I just think this committee ought to consider those numbers and the fact that we have for many years allowed young people, as they should, to participate in these athletic activities before school, and both my son and daughter were involved in athletics in high school, and I can tell you, Mr. Chairman, that if they were serious about playing on one of those teams, they had to be there for practice. And so if it's good enough for athletics, I say, Mr. Chairman, it's good enough for academics. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Representative Crescia, Wills, and Yaruso. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And thank you. I have a number of questions.
Quick ones, Representative.
Thank you. Sure. First of all, is it Ms. Sobeck?
Sobeck, yes.
Sobeck. You make a couple bold statements, and I want to make sure that we can keep this to quantitative data. You say that our workforce will suffer. We normally compete very high internationally and at the state level. Is one day going to make us that much better? Is it 2 days? Is it a week? What's the quantitative data there?
Ms. Sobeck.
Thank you. I don't have quantitative data. I don't know if it's 1 day or if it's 3 days or if it's 7 days. I just think that we need to have the flexibility to be able to continue to determine what's best, you know, for our students. I don't have quantitative. I don't think that's available that I'm aware of.
Representative Crescia.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And so as a follow-up, so we don't have the quantitative data, so this is an emotional issue. It's a local control issue. And the question you brought up is, what do we value? And we have sports starting. I agree with Representative Benson. We have thousands of students there. We also have thousands of FFA students who their state meet is the state fair. And I'm admittedly on the fence in this. I'll just tell you where I am. But when I talked to those schools, they said, hey, half of us will be down at the state fair. Half of our town won't even be here. And the problem that I have is the decisions of the metro area or the decisions of a large school district will greatly affect the business practices and school practices of other areas in the state. We have to take that in consideration. If we don't have the data, how do we get behind this?
Mr. Schneiderwin.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think one of the things that needs to be understood is that school board members are held accountable on student achievement. And I think that's what is driving this argument. And I think that's what they're, you know, we haven't been able to start before Labor Day for quite a few years. I mean, in September 1 was a negotiated agreement between the two groups. And so what I think is going to be important to see is if we look at the data from the flexible learning years to see the consortium of teachers, the consortium of school districts who have the 2 to 3 weeks before Labor Day to give them 10 to 15 more instructional days before the assessments in the spring. I think that's been the big driving part is the opportunities to learn. And that's what we want. And I think on the FFA side, if you look at the consortium under the FLY program, the flexible learning year, is there has every one of those excuses to go to the 4-H. Those districts understand the important learning opportunities there. They get that. And every one of those excuses has, or every one of those absences has been excused. I think that's also an important piece. And I think the argument is, and we've seen this in the Southwest Consortium, is that there's two districts who said, we don't want to do this anymore. our community, we're getting too much pressure from our community because we're starting before Labor Day, and as a result, we're going to make that change. And they made that change based on what the community said to them. So I think that's important to understand.
Representative Krishar, one follow-up quickly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understand all that, and as we talk about the local control, if our concern is more prep time for spring testing, don't we have the ability to change our school calendars for the Christmas break? Don't we have the ability to set the school calendar from Labor Day on? And lastly, if a school really wants to start before Labor Day, isn't there a process for that, that you could go through a waiver process and you could make that happen?
Mr. Schneiderwin.
Madam Chair, and there certainly is. And I think that again, is at the determination of the Commissioner of Education. And so that's what we're saying, is that rather than having to go through a process without any certainty that we're going to get approved for this, is we have elected board members, we have a superintendent who understand their community needs and understand the student achievement issues that they want to achieve, and so they will make that decision rather than having a Commissioner of Ed make that decision for us.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Krishna, just to address your issue, I've got an amendment, that's why we won't be voting on this today, that will require the Thursday and Friday before the state fair to be time off. So you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday of the Labor Day holiday. So you have 5 days there that the kids can show their...
Well, first of all, I need to say we have 9 representatives on the list, and at 10:45, we will move to Representative Dabney's bill. So in respect for your colleagues, please keep your comments short. Representative Krishna.
Okay, so thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Newton, just so I understand the possible amendment, so a school board could elect to start Monday, Tuesday, then take 5 days off? Is that how your amendment would be written?
Representative.
Or Monday, Newton. Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yes.
Representative Newton. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Representative Wills.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on that before I get into my question, maybe we would just include the whole time of the state fair as an exemption. Just something to think about. But my comment and question was about the flexibility piece of it, and some of the testimony has been about students who work during the summer, how this might impact them. What about students who work and go to school simultaneously? I know many students do that. Are there any numbers on students who have to quit work to go to school versus students who continue to work during school? And then kind of with that, we've also been learning about alternative learning programs and the flexibility that it allows students to work during school. And I think the more flexibility, the better. And I also understand the issue of local control. But if we could get some more information on how this might impact the students in their work schedule, that would be helpful.
Is there anyone who wants to answer that at this point? Maybe Representative Newton, you could get some information and respond to Representative Will's concerns before the next meeting.
Yes, Madam Chair. Actually, this bill will go to Commerce Committee, and we will be addressing that in Commerce Committee.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Representative Wills, did you want to follow up, or are you good?
Well, okay. Just a comment. I don't serve on the Commerce Committee, so if we could maybe talk offline about that as well, I'd appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is that, and I'm kind of ambivalent about the bill, but I keep hearing sort of the wrong reasons for doing this. The high school sports thing is kind of a red herring, because if we move up the school start time, we're going to have to move up the football start time, because what they're doing in those 2 weeks of August is two-a-day practices, and they can't do that during school. And there's kids on the other end participating in sports that go into June. High school track and high school baseball go into June. I don't know if there's others. In terms of everything I hear about improving student learning, The argument I'm not hearing about that is if vacations were more distributed through the year so that you actually cut the length of the summer vacation rather than just shifting it. And that would actually have an effect on the achievement gap. That's been shown other places, I think. But the idea that we can learn more about the student on the front end and improve the test scores and whatever, that's just about the test scores. That's just about getting another 2 weeks in before we take the test. It doesn't say anything about actually increasing student learning over the whole course of the year. It's just about the test. And I've been hearing that argument from all kinds of people that have been coming up to me, and I heard it here today. And it really kind of betrays that I get the local control part of this, and that's fine. We have to talk about that versus the economic aspects. But the part about student learning is really just about the test scores. It's not about what the kids are actually learning. I don't understand why a day in August is any different than a day in late May.
Yeah, they're tired. If you can get to your question.
Okay, I'm sorry. But if anyone could address that, that would be great.
Thank you. Anyone wish to quickly weigh in? Mr. Schneiderwin.
Mr. Chair, that's a loaded question. I think that boards, that's one of the issues of accountability for school boards, is the student testing. And so if I was too narrow in my description, I apologize, but I think what they're also want is increased learning time. They want to align their calendar with the post-secondary enrollment opportunities for their high school students to do those pieces as well. And so I think there are additional learning opportunities, but I drove home the point that boards and districts are held accountable on student achievement, and I think that's one of the pieces that I focused on was the test, and that's where they want to improve the opportunities to learn or increase the opportunities to learn to provide improvement on the test.
We have six other members with questions. We have about 10 minutes left. I'm going to jump over the list quickly to get to our minority lead, Representative Erickson, who's on the list. Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a comment. Remember, athletics and activities are voluntary, and the classroom is compulsory. So just that comment first. But I'd like to ask MDE why it is that we never hear any discussions from them about looking at the school start dates and the testing dates that they set. So could we hear from Mr. McHenry or someone from the department as to what discussions you have at the department in regard to the concerns we're hearing here today, especially in light of the testing schedule?
Yes, Mr. McHenry. And then members, you know, I actually had Darren, what's your last name?
Cordy, Mr. Chair.
I'm
Darren
sorry,
Cordy,
I apologize.
Department of Education. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that is something that we do look at as far as the cooperative that's working in Southwest Minnesota. That, you know, that is something we've been tracking their test results in conjunction with the pre-Labor Day start flexible learning year that they've been granted. As I think Mr. Scheinwood had said, you know, we've only been tracking that information for a year. So at this point, the data is kind of thin, but we are continuing to track that data.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the department probably should have a greater discussion about maybe pushing the test farther into April, or I mean, we should have turnaround results more quickly today. But if this is really a concern about districts and their test results, I know that's just one part of it because we want overall learning. Perhaps not only the data that you're collecting from the flexible learning year, but otherwise, maybe we should consider that.
Mr. Cordy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, absolutely. I think that we've been moving to an online system of testing that will provide districts with feedback in a much quicker manner than what happens now with the paper test. So I think that'll help alleviate it, but that's definitely something that our assessment folks listen to when they go out into the field and hear from districts about you know, the timeliness of the feedback that they get from us on their exams.
Thank you. Members, I'm going to take one more question. I'm going to jump over to other testifiers, but there's still time. I do have the list. Representative Sawatsky?
Mr. Chair, may I have a comment to Representative Erickson's
comment? Very briefly, Representative.
if we extend testing later in April, then we need a big window of time, for instance, in my district, Wilmer, because we have so many kids that we have to feed through our computer program. Mm-hmm. And we have 3 to 4 computer labs of 30 computers, but any given day they could be down, and then that extends it one more. You know, I mean, we have to be careful how much time we have left at the end of the year. My comment to this is I have 3 districts, school districts, and all 3 superintendents. We have Green Lake, huge tourism. They said, that superintendent said, I'd like the flexibility of being able to start when I want to start, and I will deal with our economic development agency as to if they want me to start before Labor Day or not. ACGC has a 4-day school week already. They want flexibility, but are willing to work with their already 4-day week. And Wilmer School District, they just want, he said, you know what, I'd rather have the people be mad at me than us, and I'll deal with the people, and they can elect me out or get rid of me. So I think just having local control means a lot, and is, this September Labor Day, when Labor Day is on September 1 versus September 7th, makes a huge difference. And when we have to wait all those days in September to start is, and you know, if you have to go to legislature every time to start early, it's a lot of wasted time and resources, in my opinion.
So Oscar, I like the philosophy of people being mad at other folks and not me.
I know.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, members, thank you, Ms. Schobeck. Thank you, Mr. Schneiderman. I'm going to ask Mr. Carlson, I believe, and perhaps Mr. Bagnoli, if you wish to come forward and offer your testimony. Members, I don't think we're going to be able to do questions, but this bill will be back before us again. So hold those questions, because I do want to get to Representative Dabney's bill. Gentlemen, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs firm here in St. Paul, and I appreciate my annual excursion into the Education Policy Committee and eventually be chided by my fellow education lobbyists and for my friend Roger Aronson, who lives next to me at the lake. I'm not snowblowing your driveway anymore. just our position is this on behalf of the small resorting industry. We support quality education. We support it as a top priority, but our position remains that there are so many things that you can do and try to improve learning outcomes before you even come close to approaching repealing the post-Labor Day school mandate. And we know that you have many competing interests that you need to balance in this legislature. And we appreciate that. And one of the things you need to balance, though, is the state's economy. And one of that segments is our tourism economy. Tourism in Minnesota employs 240,000 Minnesotans. 240,000. They have $12 billion in gross sales. They provide almost $800 million, 17% of the state's sales tax revenue from the tourism industry. The impact of this legislation on the small resorting industry is critical. And, while I appreciate the idea that this is a local decision, it really isn't. It's a local decision that has statewide consequences. And the reason I say that is that access to our great outdoor resources many times for average Minnesotans is only provided through a resort. And we used to have 3,500 resorts in Minnesota. We're down to 900. And when you impact their ability to be competitive and stay in business by starting this school so much earlier, and we're talking 3-4 weeks earlier now, we're going to lose that access to the resource. And I politely disagree, Representative, between a day in June and a day in September. I'm not asking you to jump in the lake, but try it on the 1st of June. It's not that great, and you really can't make those days up. August is critical. All of August is critical, and so we ask that as you make this decision, as we have in the past, please consider all of the competing interests in the state and look at ways that you can improve learning outcomes, which we fully support, that don't impact this critical segment of Minnesota's economy. Happy to answer questions. And as you know, Mr. Chairman, we'll be back. So if you want to get to another bill, we'll be back in front
of you. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli on behalf of the State Agricultural Society, better known as the Minnesota State Fair. We, too, come to oppose this bill, like my colleague, Mr. Carlson, enjoy the annual appearance here. The critical thing about the State Fair is it's a metropolitan-based entity, but it's a completely rurally dominated organization that's roots are as deep and as old, actually older than the state of Minnesota. It's the last week, unfortunately, we weren't able to testify, but the Future Farmers of America, we had about 25 of them in the room, all of whom were excited to be at the State Fair this year, all of whom spend a fair amount of time, educational time, in preparing their animals, learning about their animals, and showing their animals. I just want to remind people, and I think it's clear, and I know you know this, this bill does not add one more day of educational learning. There's not one more day. Representative Yoruso was accurate. This is a bill that provides flexibility. The chair said it underlines flexibility, and flexibility is important and a great thing to have if there's no other competing value or interest. And I think that the resorters in particular, and I frankly wouldn't suggest that the State Fair rises to that level, but the resorters in particular, when you have testimony that essentially insinuated that since school sports start on August 12th, I think the representative of the School Boards Association said we would likely start school then roughly when or districts would have the flexibility, I don't want to start then, and many would, you are taking 3 weeks, three weekends out of the resort. Flexibility, I'm going to say one more time, flexibility is important. This doesn't add one more day of school. If it added five more days of school to the calendar, it may be a different conversation here. Not one more day of school to the calendar. It provides flexibility. You can have a little bit longer holiday break, a little more flexibility to do it. And I would suggest it doesn't actually achieve better test scores. In the time when it was allowed to be before up to September 1st, and September 1st was the difference, between September 1st, I've looked at about 30 different school calendars, and roughly the difference was 3 days when they could start as early as September 1st, and September 1st was, well, September 1st obviously
Mr.
is early.
Mr. Bagnoli, I want to ask you to wrap
so,
it up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Happy to come back at your request.
Thank you. Representative Newton, I suspect you may be shoveling Mr. Aronson's driveway in the near future. The chair's going to lay over House File 261. Look forward to the continued conversation when
Thank
we get
you,
back
Mr.
to it. I think we'll try to get back to it early next week. Members, I want to do the minutes very quickly. Representative Dabney gets himself and his testifiers together. We have 3 minutes, members, and actually what I want to do is do them one by one. So we have the February 19th minutes, and I'm wondering if someone would, I'm begging for someone to move that. Representative,
so moved.
Representative Bly moves adoption of the February 19th minutes. Any discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, then we have the minutes from February 21st, and I'll need a motioner for that as well.
So moved. Sawatsky.
Representative Sawatsky moves adoption of the February 21st meeting, minutes, rather, discussion. If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And then, members, we need a motion for adoption, and then I want to have a very quick conversation on the – I'm sorry. Yeah, we had two meetings on the 19th. Okay. All right, I'm trying to be real neat, and I wound up messing that up. Representative Sawatsky, can you move to reconsider the motion to adopt the February 19th minutes?
I move to reconsider the adoption of February 19th.
Members, all in favor of reconsideration, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. motion prevails. So those minutes are not adopted. Members, there are two. There were two meetings on the 19th. I apologize. And so, Representative Sawaski, I'm wondering if you would be so kind as to move the minutes of the joint House Finance and Education Policy Committee minutes. Representative Sawaski moves adoption of the 19th minutes of the joint committee hearing. Discussion. If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. I'm starting to like this. All right. Now, I'll need a motion to adopt the February 19th minutes of this committee that was held at 10 a.m. or 10:03 a.m., I guess, on February 19th. I'll need a motioner.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barrett moves adoption of the February 19th committee minutes where we called the committee to order in 10:03. Members, there was some confusion. This is the hearing where we had the integration bill. And I just want to be, I want to make sure everyone's very comfortable with how we captured this. There was some confusion as we were moving through an amendment that Representative Erickson had offered. And so that is on page 2 of the minutes. So what I had done in the minutes, and so we listened to the tape, is that I actually liked parts of that amendment, but not all of it. And so I moved to divide the amendment, and I moved to divide it into three parts. We then voted on the first part, and that was adopted. And then there was sort of a kind of a back-and-forth conversation with Representative Erickson, myself, a few other members. I then withdrew my request for that second division, so now we had the entire rest of the amendment before us. And Representative Erickson, I believe what you were trying to do was I mean, you said it, but you know, we didn't have a formal motion. Was say, Mr. Chair, you know, we can work on that language, and I think what you're trying to do is withdraw the amendment so we can do that. But we didn't have a motion on the record to withdraw the amendment. And then Representative Erickson moved on to another amendment, and I said, well, wait a minute, we have something hanging out there. And so I moved at that point to consider the remaining of the Erickson amendment, spoke against it, and then we voted it down. And so that's what we've captured in the minutes. I just want to make sure everyone's clear about that and comfortable. All right. Sounds good. So, members, if there's no further discussion, then all in favor of the motion to adopt the February 19th, 10:03 a.m. Minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we have House File 477, Representative Dabney. You have a motion before us.
I do, Mr. Chair. You scared me when I sat down in the chair and you said, all right, members, we have 3 minutes. I thought, oh, we're moving fast today.
You can do it. If anyone can do it, it's Representative Dabney.
There we go. Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move that House File 477 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Very well.
Sorry to hold you up, Representative Dabney.
Not a problem, Madam Chair.
We've allowed Chair Mariani the opportunity to blow his nose in peace and quiet. So,
thank you for putting that on the table.
He actually had put it on earlier.
So. Oh, I missed that.
Yes. So Representative Dabney has moved that House File 477 be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. And I understand you have an author's amendment, Representative Dabney.
That's correct, Madam Chair. I do. I'd like to move the H-477A1 amendment be before the committee. This is my amendment, and it simply aligns Section 2 of the bill, language in there regarding eligibility for the new intended standard high school diploma for adults with the language in Section 1 of the bill on the new standard high school diploma for adults.
So Representative Dabney, in order to get the bill in the shape he would like, has moved the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion is adopted. The motion is passed. The amendment is adopted. I don't know if I have that right. But Will you please explain your bill, Representative Dabney?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, for adult learners who lack a high school credential, the world is changing in a number of important ways, and this bill attempts to catch up to that changing world. The demands of higher education are changing for these individuals in two ways. The entrance requirements at colleges and universities often are tightening, and GEDs are not as acceptable as they once were. Secondly, and importantly, the federal government has tightened the requirements for the ability to access Pell Grants. Previously, if you demonstrated an ability to benefit from college and completed 6 college credits but lacked a secondary credential, you could then access Pell Grants. As of now or later this year, that will no longer be the case, and the federal government will require that you have a secondary credential in order to be able to access Pell Grants for your higher education expenses. And importantly, Minnesota's adult learners are changing, and the needs and the assets that they bring need to be credited. These are adults. They're not children going through the K-12 system. They have life experiences, professional skills, and abilities that deserve credit. Section 1 of the bill establishes a rulemaking process for the Commissioner of Education to develop a single statewide adult high school diploma for those who are not eligible any longer for kindergarten through K-12 services, do not currently have a high school diploma, and successfully complete a course of instruction. And Section 2 of the bill establishes a task force to assist the commissioner in establishing what that statewide criteria for a high school diploma would be. This is important because while some districts in the state do currently provide a high school diploma as an option for adult learners, they set their own standards. And that's creating problems for some of those learners, both for employment and for higher education, because not all of those high school diplomas are seen as equal. This would establish one standard for all of those diplomas statewide. With me today is Mr. Tom Citrin-Heisem from the Minnesota Literacy Action Network.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Before we take your testimony, I'd like to just take a moment. We have guests in the audience today. We have 12th grade students from Higher Ground Academy who are participating with the Minnesota Historical Society's Voice of the People, your role in Minnesota government. So I hope we hold a high standard and example today. Let's welcome these students. Your testimony, I'm going to say Mr.
Citrin-Heisem.
Citrin-Heisem, thank you.
At least my first name is easy to get. Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Dabney, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you for a few minutes today. As Representative Dabney mentioned, I serve as legislative chair for Literacy Action Network, which is a statewide professional advocacy group for adult basic education. And today I'd like to talk briefly about two topics. First, since I know this, some of the committee members are new, I'd like to very briefly talk a little bit about adult basic education, just so you have a little bit of context. And then secondly, a little bit more about the House File 477, which would establish a statewide credential. So in terms of adult basic education, or ABE, ABE provides literacy and basic skills instructions for low-skilled adults, helps them become self-sufficient and to participate effectively as workers, family members, and citizens. Our primary audience includes native-born Americans who, for some reason, have dropped out of school somewhere along the line, and also new Americans who lack adequate English skills. And we provide a variety of services to help provide all of them with the instruction that they need. I want to mention also that of Minnesota's 3.3 million working-age adults, over 250,000 have not completed high school or its equivalent, and over 60,000 speak little or no English. So our potential audience for services is quite large. Also, more than 346,000 of those adults earn less than a living wage, which is defined as twice the federal poverty rate. The work we do is really crucial in preparing low-skilled adults to help meet Minnesota's future labor needs. We are the only statewide educational program that focuses on meeting the needs of this population. Last year, we served over 73,000 adults. Of those, 38% were English language learners, 39% basic skills, 16% GED or adult diploma, and 7% workforce preparation. We're funded largely by the state with some federal money. Just a couple of our outcomes that we're very, very proud of. We have met our federally established targets in Minnesota more often than any other state. We feel really good about that. We have also received WIA incentive grants in recognition of excellent outcomes more than any other state, largely based on ABE outcomes. And we are one of only three states to receive these awards the last time they were given a couple of years ago. We also have shown a really steady increase in terms of the outcomes for our learners, in terms of completing an educational level based on certain standardized tests. It was 48% last year compared to 36% 5 years ago compared to 21% 10 years ago. So we're feeling very good about our steadily increasing accomplishments with our learners. Some of the major trends in ABE are a greater intensity of service and persistence of learners, which we've worked hard at, and that's leading to better outcomes. Collaboration with GEED, workforce centers, and MinSCU. Development of career pathways through fast track and other means. Professional development and distance learning we're really starting to explore in large part. A little bit now about the specific bill under consideration, House File 477. In terms of the background, a statewide task force was convened at the request of the Department of Education ABE office 2 years ago to examine alternative secondary diploma options. Some of the factors behind this included some really massive changes in how the GED is being administered and designed, shifts in workforce development, as Representative Dabney mentioned, increased the need for a high school diploma, and the need for a diploma that's responsive to the specific life experiences, circumstances, and learning styles of adults. We're not talking about 18-year-old, you know, young people here, but people anywhere between early 20s, well into their 40s. And we worked with several respected consultants to examine the changing economic and educational needs and trends, what's happening in career pathways, what other states are doing, and what is needed in Minnesota. The proposal that we're putting forth would assess student skills in three main areas to obtain the adult diploma: academic skills, personal and professional success skills, and career readiness skills. Some of what we believe this new diploma would accomplish is, first of all, it would provide consistent statewide standards. As Representative Dabney mentioned, there are some ABE programs now who choose to give such a diploma, but they each set their own standards, so whether MinSCU campuses or employers will accept it is all over the map. It'll be portable, so that if we know that our population moves a lot, so if somebody starts working on an adult diploma in one location and moves somewhere else, they can pick right up and continue. It'll be responsive to the life circumstances and the learning styles of adults. It'll also help adults who desire to enter the military or pursue higher education. The military has very severe limits on the number of GED applicants it will accept, so having a diploma is really very helpful there. It'll help align with other workforce development efforts, and we hope that eventually it will help reduce the need for developmental education within MinSCU as ABE addresses the multiple skill needs while preparing adults for the diploma. Why is this needed? We mentioned that many ABE programs do not offer such a diploma. Standards are inconsistency, and thus accessibility is inconsistent. One of the things we feel very good about in terms of ABE and the funding formula that was developed a number of years ago with the legislature is it makes sure that ABE services are provided consistently throughout the state in all geographic locations. So passing this bill would help make this service consistent with that funding formula. GED does not currently meet the needs of many adults. It's not accepted as an equivalent to a diploma. Also, the cost for the GED is going up since it was has been acquired from a nonprofit by Pearson VUE. They are redrafting it. The cost will go up and the accessibility will go down. And Minnesota needs for a more highly trained workforce are increasing. So what is happening elsewhere? Because I know you're often interested in what's going on in other states. States around the country are exploring various ways to provide adult secondary credentials. At least 10 already offer alternative diploma pathways, including alternatives to the GED, new forms of career pathways, and alternative secondary credentials. Many are looking at alternatives to the GED. And I want to emphasize that we are not saying we should do away with the GED, but there should also be an alternative route for people who need the secondary credential. Wisconsin, our neighbor, is a leader in this area. They are working on a career pathway-based approach with multiple options, and there are actually 5 different ways that people can get adult diplomas if they live in Wisconsin. Some of those include completing a competency-based program, attaining a certain number of post-secondary credits,
and completing the GED plus some additional work in health, civics, and career awareness. So in conclusion, we ask you to hopefully positively look at this legislation and pass it. We believe it would be of real benefit to our adult learners as well as to the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to ask if there's anyone in the audience that would like to testify, either for or against House File 477. If not, are there questions from committee members? Oh, yes. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlund, and I represent the Minnesota Community Education Association, which are provide adult basic education in many of your school districts. And I just wanted to say that MCA supports this bill, and we're happy and available to answer any questions, and we appreciate the Literacy Action Network for bringing this forward.
So, any questions from members? Well, that's a first.
Sure. So. Representative Dabney renews his motion.
Yes. So Representative Dabney renews his motion.
Madam Chair, yes, I'm sorry to interrupt, but where will this bill be referred to after government operations?
Representative Dabney, could you answer that for Representative Erickson?
Mr. Grafstrom, can you answer that for Representative Erickson?
We will send it to, well, government operations would refer it to the Committee on Education and Finance.
Okay. Okay, any other questions, comments? All right, Representative Dabney renews his motion to pass House File 477 as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes and the bill is re-referred.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani, before we adjourn,
Before you adjourn, I just want to, I shared this with committee members that were here on time this morning, and so I want to repeat it for others. So the next hearing, we're going to hear Representative Dabney again. We're going to take up the bullying bill. Members, I fully expect that to be a very robust conversation, and so we've reserved, if we can get through it in the morning, so be it, more power to us, but I have reserved the evening to continue that discussion, and my intent would be for us to vote on the bill by Thursday evening. The bill, if it's successful through our committee, would need to make a couple of other stops before heading out either to the floor or to the K-12 Finance Committee. And so, Mr. Grafstrom, I forget the time, if you can let the committee members know what time in the evening we've got the
basement room. Hearing room at 5 o'clock.
Okay, basement hearing room is at 5 o'clock. Bring, come well fortified. I think it'll be a good conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. And, Madam Chair, that's all I have.
Thank you, Representative.
And Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, we have 11 o'clock session that morning, too, so we will have an abbreviated meeting.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, good reminder, Representative Erickson. Okay, with that, if there are no further questions, the meeting stands adjourned.